All right. Well, what I have marked, I think, is the one that was for the time before. I have rewards of generosity marked, but I think we already did that. And talked about the captives who returned to Jerusalem. Is that ringing anybody's bell?
Now, I have a second check mark
down
where it says, when we read about the saints at Jerusalem.
That's what I have, but I have 1120 with the date outside, so
I lost it. Oh, because mine looks different from yours. The generosity to Paul, I think. Well, let me find it. I got to remember the number of pages, too.
It's on page 2 where I had one.
Jean's pages are different than ours.
Oh, totally different.
And teaching pages are different.
Yeah.
When we read about the saints.
Okay. I think you're right, because I didn't have a second check mark, and I remembered the other one before. So, I think I lost a page out of my original teaching lesson, so we're going to go with yours, because I'm not finding what I thought I was going to find. So, let's talk about, we've been talking about generosity and how in the Old Testament it was a requirement. I'm not sure that counts as generosity if it's not out of your heart, but God made very specific requirements in the Old Testament for people to help their brothers if they were in need. And here's how you're going to do it. It was very lined out. Ours is less detailed, less structured, but that's true about the whole New Testament as compared to the law. You know, we are given concepts as opposed to so many very thou shalt and thou shalt not. So when we read about the saints at Jerusalem helping one another, I think I've heard a lot of people say, would we be that generous today? Would we be able to do that? Now, I think the answer is yes, because these were extreme circumstances. But I know that we all have our own things, and I think there's that human desire to hold on to what we have. We've worked hard to get it. You know, we're gonna keep it. But these people were... Yeah, I felt a little bit like some of them on the road. Just, in fact, I had told Roger, I said, you know, if we can't find a hotel, because a lot of them were booked up, the first one we went to didn't have any place, the second one had 4 rooms left. I said, we'll figure out a way to call some of the Christians here in town, and we'll get a place to stay.
That's what I was thinking first when you said that.
If that ever happens to anyone, I am involved with the homeschool network, and I can send an email and probably get a reply within seconds.
Okay.
So don't ever be stranded somewhere.
Okay, that's good to know, because I mean, I'm
connected to homeschoolers all over the United States.
Okay, I knew somehow we'd be able to find the Christians in that community, and that they would open their doors to us.
Now, if there was ever a need.
Yeah. How wonderful is that? There are people in the world, they have no concept of that whatsoever. I had a friend at Weatherford College one time, and I can't even remember why we were talking. Oh, I was out of town on a business trip, and I was talking to him, and I said, I've called the congregation, and they're going to come get me. And he said, he was a cop. He said, you can't get into some stranger's car. And I said, sure I can. I'll send somebody's grandmother and I'll get in the car and it'll be fine. But the concept of that was outside of his world. He couldn't even imagine that that would be okay. And we have that, and we know that it's there and that we're all connected.
We have to go a little further, though, and we have to help the stranger in need.
We do.
You know.
And that's maybe a little scarier in today's world. Although we say that, but you know, the people that beat up the man and left him on the side of the road for the Samaritan to find, they weren't good people. There's always been bad people in the world.
There's just a lot more clever ways to be bad these days.
But he didn't take them into his home. He took them somewhere.
To an inn.
To an inn.
And I do think we have to be cautious at times. But that doesn't mean we can't help people. We can do it. There's always a way to help. There's always a way to help.
It's much different now than when I was young. Mm-hmm. But it was nothing for us to have a stranger in our mm-hmm. house, that my dad would know somebody who knew this somebody,
right.
who knew this some other somebody.
So there's some connection there.
And there weren't motels on every
right.
street corner.
Right, it was a different,
was different.
Different world.
My dad used to call my mom and say, there's someone that needs some meal. So she'd fix him breakfast, but she never let him in the house by herself. But he'd sit out on the back porch and she'd fix a big breakfast and he'd eat.
I remember us living close to railroad tracks, and bums, you know, they followed those railroads.
Yeah.
And they would sometimes get off and knock on your door. And we never let them in the house.
Right.
But we gave them food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I said there's a lot of ways to help, and we can help people even in today's world without putting ourselves in danger. An interesting sidebar is that, you know, Kaylee's at Texas Tech, and there's a parents' organization that you can sign up to be a part of as a safety net for kids traveling. And the kids have this list of names and phone numbers, and if they need gasoline or a place to stay or whatever, they can call. And since we're right on the interstate, of course, we signed up right away. So there are ways to help. I do think, maybe I'm just thinking for me, that if it got to this point of everybody needing to be communal, there would be we would have to overcome some personal barriers of
if you had a lazy person, you're not too generous with them.
Amy?
That's exactly what I was going to point out, because when I answered this, I answered in a way that now that I've had time to think about it, I disagree with my answer. That's exactly what I was going to say, though, is that this communal mindset was not something I believe they lived in forever.
I don't think so.
I believe it was a specific need. There was thousands of people that had come to Jerusalem for this occasion. They ended up staying because they obeyed the gospel. They wanted to study and learn more.
Right.
They needed a place to stay.
Yeah.
And so these provisions were made because it was an emergency situation,
right,
not a we're going to mooch off you forever kind
right
of thing. In fact, my suspicion is if they stayed there for any length of time, they probably worked and, you know.
That would be my guess. But that it was, like you said, for a specific time under extreme circumstances. And I like to think we'd all do that. I asked Roger, while we're sitting on the road, there's a lot of time to just talk, you know, because you get bored. And I said, okay, in a theoretical situation, we're traveling and it's this kind of weather and we don't have anybody else near us that we could go to. Just, could we go stay in the church building overnight where it was warm? And he said, I think that's David and the showbread. I think absolutely we could. He said, now I think that would be your choice, your last choice on the list. You know, I'd be calling Mary and say, can I stay at your house if my mother wouldn't let me come to hers? And sometimes she gets mad at me and you just can't know for sure. So, but I don't think that would be wrong. And I think we have an example of an extreme situation where that was allowed.
But if you were traveling and you called somebody else, I mean, like if you were in Little Rock and you called a Christian, and you'd tell them and everything, you would explain who you are, where you go to church,
and I'd say, here are three people you can call. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But so many people that come here, they don't.
There's no connection. There's no connection. They just see a church building.
Yeah.
And yet, I know absolutely that a lot of people in this congregation are very generous to the people who just show up. The church doesn't do anything, but I've seen lots of people digging in their pockets and handing money, so I know for a fact that happens.
But you have to know that, too. I mean, sometimes you don't know what goes on.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and I thought about that Sunday that we were here and there was threats of the storm. You know, if we happened to have the storm strike while we were here, we would all be stranded here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd be spending the night.
Yeah.
So it would be foolish to say, oh, the church building is so sacred, we could never do that.
Because the building isn't.
Situation that we would put ourselves or our children in danger,
right,
you know, or get stranded on the highway and then therefore put others in danger that have to try to go around us in those
conditions. We'd sure be hoping Irwin had some snacks because there's no kitchen.
I thought about all of that. I was like, what would we do? We'd have no blankets, nothing, you know.
Kick that heat up and the pews are long enough, you know.
Keep it warm.
I thought of that when they said they opened the church at Gainesville. I thought, well, it wouldn't be any good. We don't have any blankets in the kitchen.
No, we're not a rescue place.
Well, you know, when it flooded before in the dam, I'm so far back, no one knows what I'm talking about.
I've read the stories.
But off some of the areas were completely flooded. Well, the church building was open for people to bring stuff to get these people dry and fed. And I don't think that was wrong. That's not the purpose of the right. church building.
But and we it wasn't coming out of the congregation's money.
Yeah,
it
was we were in a pickle. We needed a place to do stuff.
So I guess the point is that we know how to be communal, and it's, if there's a problem with it, it's probably our own personal problem that we need to be dealing with.
Someone told me once that it's easy to have nothing and get, and you know, be poor and get rich. But when you have something, it's very hard to turn loose of it.
It is, because very few of us got what we have given to us. Most of us have worked hard and have saved and have done all these frugal things to be at a certain level. And I think our human nature kicks in. And when we could, say, offer somebody 100, maybe what we want to offer is 20. You know, I think we have to work on our spirit of generosity. So, moving on to Cornelius, we know very little about him. Somebody want to read Acts 10, 1 through 3 for me?
I have it. Okay, Mary. There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian regiment. A devout man, one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people and prayed to God always. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw clearly in a vision an angel of God coming in and saying to him, Cornelius? Can we go ahead?
No, that's right. Okay, we have very little information about Cornelius, and of course what we're talking about today is not the primary point of the story of Cornelius. But in that little bit of information we're given, what's one of the things it talks about?
Generosity.
It's generosity. So that tells me that's a fairly important thing on the list. You know? It was noted in this tiny bit of information that we had, that he was a good man, he was generous to others. So why do you suppose that was noted?
Pretty important.
Pretty important.
The second great commandment, love your neighbor as yourself.
Right. And all of us, sorry, I lost my thought. I think it's important that we note that generosity is told to us a whole lot of times because, again, the New Testament operates on concepts as opposed to strict commandments.
And generosity is a quality of love and compassion, which are things of God. And so those who are abounding in giving are typically people who love and fear God. That's not always true, but typically there's at least some respect for God in there somewhere that we recognize that what we have is not our own.
Right. And I think that's the underlying principle of generosity. What we have is not our own. And all that thing about I've worked hard and I've done all this, that's the rich man in his barns. And what happened to him? Gone just like that. And of course we're all brought back to our own mortality anytime we're dealing with a death of someone near us. You know, Roger's father just died, and you know, he, like most people, had some money saved up. He was not a wealthy man, but you know, some accumulation, and that's a good thing, because we need, you know, you can take care of yourself till the end of your life if the Lord wills on that. But I found myself thinking about this little bit of money that he has, and it's just going to go to his sons. And for him, the rest of this money meant nothing. His life is over. The money has no bearing on anything. And so while we are commanded to take care of our families, we are supposed to be good stewards of what's given to us. So there's nothing wrong with accumulating and saving. It is wrong if we start putting very much faith in that, because that's not going to get us what we need. Okay, Romans 15, 25 through 27. Debbie, will you find that one?
Mm-hmm.
But now I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints, for it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints here in Jerusalem. It pleased them indeed, and they are their debtors. For if the Gentiles have been partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is to minister to them in material things.
So, our duty is to help others, particularly the saints. So my question is, and you don't have to tell any stories if you don't want to, but think about, have you ever had an opportunity to do this, to help a brother or sister in Christ? I know there have been times in my life that I have. So the question is, how did that make you feel? Did you sit back and go, wow, I hate that I had to give them up the money?
Good.
It's good. Yeah. It feels, it's very selfishly, it feels good to be in that position.
I always feel better when I give than when I'm on the receiving end.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very hard for me to be on the other side, which I know is a form of pride, and the Lord has humbled me a few times and made me in that position where I've had to receive. But then, you know, through my current situation, I'm blessed enough that we are able to give mm-hmm. sometimes. And sometimes we've given where we're kind of scared. And, mm-hmm. you know, we realize that money had another purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we going to do?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it still feels good to give it.
It does.
And the funny thing is the Lord always manages
to take care of it.
Help you figure it out and, you know.
And that's probably good for us, too, mm-hmm. to have to
lean on
think
him.
About how we're doing that and take that help from the Lord.
So many times people that you do give something to, they want to repay you, mm-hmm. and you don't want anything. Mm-hmm. I mean,
no. I really don't want a repayment. I want them to do that for someone else when their circumstances
yeah.
allow it. You know, the phrase now is pay it forward. And when their circumstances allow them to have the ability to be helpful to someone else, do that. That's better than it coming back to me.
And we need to remember, as we all feel the pride, and it's hard to take,
mm-hmm.
that if we think, well, we're allowing other people to do what they should do by accepting their generosity.
And it is hard to be on the receiving end, and I think that's good. I think it would be bad if it were easy for us to just accept help from people all the time. That would not be a good attitude of our heart. But the fact that someone can help when we need it is a blessing. It's a blessing, and it's the way the Lord works. He's going to take care of us, but that doesn't mean he's going to drop $100 bills out of the sky onto the front lawn. No, he's going to help us through people.
I was watching a TV program the other day. I remember, actually, I guess it just kind of came on when it was off. But there was a woman being told, and I think this was in Hawaii, and they were talking about a lot of people go there and enjoy the blessings of the government while they live a life of ease. And the interviewer said something, and they were going to take away the food stamps. He said, oh no, don't take away my food stamp. Here she is on the island, the sun hat on, you're having a good time. Don't take my food stamp.
Some article I saw on Facebook yesterday where a guy talks about he trades in his food stamps for cash so he can buy his beer and his cigarettes.
I saw that.
But we can't control what other people do.
One of the weird circumstances lately with food stamps is that people, because I make jewelry, I've had people pay me in food because they've had reduced hours and they're on food stamps now so they can get their children jewelry for Christmas and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of disturbing.
Yeah. I would think it would be disturbing because if you're in really dire straits, hang on to that food. That you're going to need that more.
You know, but that they it's kind of strange to be handed a chicken so that some teenage girl can have a piece of jewelry.
Yeah. Now, there was a time in our country when bartering for food was very common. I know Granddad and Papa took food for preaching. And that's not a bad system, but I'm like you. I have a hard time, as beautiful as your jewelry is, thinking that that's worth giving food away for. If you're in a strait where you're getting food stamps, that means you don't have much money.
It's just all mixed up these days, so we know.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to word it, but
giving to charities and all these things you get in the mail, you're just mm-hmm. inundated by them. And I don't know, I've come to the conclusion I would rather give cash to people. I don't know. There's some charities, okay, but you don't know how much of that actually goes to help.
Yeah, right. That's true. I think you have to research very carefully on any of those things that you give.
And once you give, like, you give once a year, okay, then you're inundated every month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I feel a little guilty about keeping all the mailing labels they send me, except nobody else could use them because they have my name, so.
Yeah, I did for a while, but so many of them now are sending nickels or dimes.
I keep those too.
I'm not getting those.
I'll give you some of mine. I started grinding some of them up. I get so many of them.
You grind up your nickels?
No.
Oh, no. The labels.
No. Okay. Just break my machine.
No, I do think you have to be really careful in today's world. A lot of those charities are, you know, 90% goes to their operation and salaries, and 10% goes to the people that they're yes. saying they're helping.
I've tried to just maybe keep it local, but even local, they go to Washington and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I have a couple that I've researched and I feel pretty good about and do that. But I'm like you, I like the direct impact that I can help someone directly. Okay. Joe, would you read 2 Corinthians 9:5 and Pat Philippians 4:10?
But as it is written, eye has not seen nor ear heard, nor have entered into. Is that first Corinthians?
Second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nine, five. 2 Corinthians 9.
Okay.
Verse 5.
Got it. Okay. For to the end, I also wrote that I might put you to the test, whether you are obedient in all things. Now, whom you forgive anything, I also forgive. For if indeed I have forgiven anything, I have forgiven that one for your sake and the presence of Christ, lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices.
Okay, I must have put the wrong scripture down because that doesn't fit.
Yeah.
That doesn't fit.
9:5? Yeah. Is that what you read?
2 Corinthians 9:5.
That's not what she read.
No, that's not what I read.
Oh, okay.
I'm wrong one.
I started to get what she right. reading.
Okay, 9:5. Got it. I don't know what's going on this morning. Okay. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grand. I'm going to get my glasses on. I can't read without grudging obligation.
Okay. Philippians 4 and 10.
For I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity.
Okay, so a couple of things here. One is they prepared ahead of time for this gift they were going to give to him. It wasn't a, oh, what's in my pocket? What can I hand over, you know, that's just handy? It was a preparation. They knew what they were going to do. They made arrangements for this generosity. And secondly, I've forgotten what Philippians 4:10 said. Read it again. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you already put it away?
No. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked an opportunity.
Okay, thank you. That's the part I was trying to get to. They had cared before. They had shown their generosity before, but sometimes they didn't have the opportunity to be generous. There are times in our lives where no matter how willing we are, if we are giving, we're hurting our families. And I don't just mean, well, the portfolio will be a little less. I mean, serious, I can't do that this time. And I think we know from what Paul said that that's all right, that there are times that our situation may not cause us to be the receiver of the generosity, but it may cause us to have to back up and look at our own situation, because we can't put our family in need in order to serve others. But it made me think about, we support these preachers, you know, as a congregation, which is a good thing. But what about helping them as individuals? Should we do that? Do we do that? You know,
is
that...
If we can.
If we can. You know, because I think about these men in India, particularly, who live on just nothing. And, you know, $50 from me is going to make a big difference in their life. It's going to make very little difference in my life at this stage of the game. There was a time in my life that $50 would have been impossible. I couldn't pay rent if I, you know, did $50. So I think we have to look at other situations, but we have to look at our own as well. Debbie, do you have something you want to say? Don't scratch your nose. I'll think you will talk to me. I guess what I'm trying to point out is that just because the congregation makes these support payments, it doesn't mean that we can't certainly do something to help.
I took it in a different direction, the question. I mean, I understand now what you meant, but at the time, I took it as helping them as a person, rather than me as a person helping them.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I took it out of financial and into other ways we can help them, because preachers get discouraged.
Sure.
I'm sure Debbie can attest to times when Stan probably felt frustrated. And
I've preached these 15 fine sermons and nobody's paying attention. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, and just, you know, the same problems or people verbally attacking you or accusing you of saying something you didn't say. And you know, I think overall this congregation seems to be pretty kind to Stan, but I don't know what happened in the past, you know. And the point is, preachers go through that. Preachers, you look at the prophets in the Old Testament, how they felt like no one was listening.
I'm the last one.
No one cared like they did. And so letters of encouragement and phone calls, emails, things to kind
of... That's a really good point.
Cheer them up sometimes.
Because generosity is not just money. Generosity is not just money.
It's funny because, of course, Jeremiah, this is his first preaching job, and he's called his dad, and he's been kind of discouraged because, you know, he's preaching all this stuff.
Nobody's paying attention.
He just, you know, he's trying to get it all in, like he doesn't have tomorrow,
right?
Which is a good thing. And his dad's like, you know, it's a lifetime.
And that's
they
an
haven't
element.
Been hearing this. You know, it's going to take time and be patient and, you know, you're in it for the long haul type thing.
And that's an element of youth.
Yeah.
You know, when we're young, we've suddenly had this great flash of brilliance. And we want to share it with everybody. And they don't get it. What's wrong? And that's a function of youth.
Well, and somebody just placed membership last Sunday. So he's doing great. He's doing great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're aware of other things, and you think they should change like that.
Right.
And it just doesn't happen.
And as we mature, we learn some patience, and we learn that, you know, things don't always happen overnight, but planting the seed is what's important. It's hard to know that when you're 21.
Yeah, it is.
Stan came over, I guess it was, I don't know, last week, and he to look at my computer, and he downloaded Jeremiah's website. So when we couldn't come Sunday, I went in and listened to a sermon Sunday morning and a sermon Sunday night, and he is good.
The times I've heard him, I would say that. He is good.
I asked Dan, I said, do you help him, or does he write those, or is he using things from other preachers? And he said, no, he was doing them.
He has a gift for it.
When I was there helping him move and stuff, that was the first time I heard him preach away. I mean, he preached here before he left, but it's
different.
When he was there, he had a real presence up there, and he was loud. And, I mean, not too loud, but
he was commanding.
himself.
Commanding the room.
I said, you can preach like that. He said, well, it's different, you know, in front of people, you know.
And you're there.
You can't. He didn't feel like he could, I don't know. But
yeah. It was,
I can understand.
Sure.
Debbie, gentle reminder, now that he has an apartment, you could share his address. And little note writers from here could write it.
I have it in my wallet.
I'll do that. Up on the board so we can all
Yeah, that'd be good. Yes. Not without honor, except it's in his own country.
He needs to put it in the bulletin. I just...
The church building there where he is, too. It's a beautiful building, at least from the outside.
Well, you were talking about Sunday, and we thought we were going to be able to worship the congregation that evening, but then we finally got in touch with people, and both congregations in Blytheville were shut down. So we went back to the room, and we had a devotional, and we had looked all over Blytheville, and I don't know who lives there, but there is no unleavened bread in Blytheville, Texas, Arkansas. There's not. So we went back to the room, and I had flour, and we went to the store. I got a little bag of flour and some Crisco, and I had a glass bowl and a plastic spoon, and so we made some communion bread in the microwave. That was interesting. But then Roger and I don't really sing together very well because we both sing harmony. There's nobody to do the lead. So I went online and found a Mennonite group that was singing a cappella, so we sang with them for a while. Strange.
I tried to sing by myself, and that doesn't work. I don't even know that. The soprano, you know, because I don't sing that.
Okay, so you're right. Generosity, and I appreciate you bringing that up, includes more than money. And we have been focusing on the money. But it's encouragement, it's support, it's pats on the back. It's, do you need to talk to somebody? You know, just those kinds of things. And I will say that we, like most congregations that I've ever been in, when we break up after the services, we tend to talk to the same people. We all have friends, and we tend to migrate to that group. I've chastised Tracy for years. I said, just talk to your family. Talk to them later. Quit. But I think we do need to think about that a little bit, about making sure we get around to speak to everybody. That's why Roger wanted to move to the back. He said, I can't talk to people. If we're sitting up front, people leave before I can get to them. So generosity of ourselves is really important, too.
I used to have a rule with my children that before they could go talk to their friends, they needed to talk to 5 people that were either visiting or adults that they didn't talk to normally. They needed to go greet them and, you know.
That's a very good rule.
Make
like
very
that.
Short, small talk was fine, but they needed to do 5 people before they could go visit.
I like that idea. It's very good.
That's great. Very good about that for a while. I don't know now what he's doing, but he used to come up to you.
Shake hands with everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I told the kids, I'm like, what do I say? I said, you don't have to say anything. Just hug their neck, say you're glad to see them, and they'll take it from there.
That's right.
But, that's very important.
And we do, as older people, need to remember that it is difficult for the younger ones to talk. They don't know what to say. Right. They go, ugh.
Well, and too, for older people, it's hard to get to them, you know. Mm-hmm. I know that more would talk. If they're there, they're going to talk to them. Mm-hmm. We do need to encourage the young ones.
And we need to make ourselves available to talk to them.
Yes.
We need to make eye contact. We need to smile.
Every once in a while, we need to approach them.
We do. We don't need to ignore the young people.
She just said that Joel was very good about doing that.
Yeah. Joel hugged
somebody
me the other day.
I was surprised.
Yes.
Has just attended meetings over here. I think sometimes a visitor is probably even more aware than the congregation, mm-hmm. because he always came up and made sure that he greeted us.
Well, that's
when
nice.
He came over. So.
That's good. But Joel's more reticent, you know, in his social thing, but the fact that he hugged me that was great. Because, as an older person, I don't want to inflict that on a kid. So, the Lord sums it up for us. Chris, would you like to read in 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 7? And then, Mother, would you read Acts 20 and 35? Okay. 2 Corinthians 9, 6 through 7.
Well, this is
oh no, louder than that.
Okay.
I can't read you. My hearing is kind of strange, so it's like the opposite of hearing loss. So. But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Let each man do according as he hath purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver.
Okay, Mother, next one.
In everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak and remember the word of the Lord Jesus, that he himself said, it is better, more blessed to give than to receive.
So, Paul talks about it by telling us that we need to have that feeling of generosity. We need to look for opportunities to be generous. And then in Acts, it talks helping the weak. So that goes back to what Amy was telling us, that our generosity is not just financial. It's also giving of our time, of our energy, of our heart. You know, you can give time, and if people can tell you really hate being there, that's not exactly a generous thing. Yvonne?
Opal called me late yesterday afternoon to say that she wasn't going to try to come this morning because of the weather, and she said that she was really sad that she just had a death, and I asked her who, and she said it was the woman that lived across the hall from her. I think she said Mary Riley. She was 96, and Opal had mentioned before that she had been, she's the only one that really checks on Opal and everything, and Opal was just almost in tears. She was so broken up and everything. So I asked her, I said, well, can I come over and sit with you? And she said, oh no, I'll be okay. But anyway, she would, so yeah. If you have a chance, you might just
Okay. Writer,
I don't know. I think that was just yesterday she died.
You know, a long time ago in Weatherford, there were these two women that were just joined at the hip. You never saw one without the other. They were friends, not related in any way, but they were always, always together. And one of the ladies got cancer and died. And I ran into the other one several months later. And we were acquaintances, not friends, but, you know, I knew her when I saw her. And I asked her how she was doing after the loss of her friend. And she burst into tears months and months later, and she said, you're the only person that's ever asked me how I was doing after my friend died. She said everybody was good, you know, with her family.
Yeah.
But they never, and I thought, how could they not know? Because you didn't see one of these women without the other one, ever.
I don't think Opal sees too many people in the complex where she lives, except this woman right across the hall from her. She would check on Opal and everything, but she's been sick for a little while. She was really upset yesterday.
Well, we need to remember that about Opal.
Out of curiosity, do you know how old Opal is?
I'm going to say she's 89. I'm not sure.
Because it struck me when you were saying that. Would you say 96 and she checks on Opal?
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, they check back and forth.
Yeah, that's all right.
That's cute.
Amy?
So I've been the recipient of this, which is why it taught me the value in it. But one time I was in a situation where, you know, I was out for the day. I had gone to visit one of our elders' wives. She was shut in and discouraged. And so I had spent longer with her than I intended. And I had had a second stop I was going to make. It was a young mom with a couple of kids, and she had ordered some Mary Kay. So I was going to bring it to her. But she was across the city, and it was going to take another 40 minutes just to get to her house, and then I had an hour's trip home. So I called her and told her I wouldn't be there. You know, I'd just give it to her on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And this was Monday. And so, but I could tell in her voice there was a problem. And I was like, she had just lost her mom a couple months before, and I was like, are you okay? And she's like, oh, I'm just having a hard day, and I'll be right there.
Yeah.
It's going to take me 40 minutes, but I'll be there.
Yeah.
And I went, and she was so blessed by those few minutes I spent with her. And I couldn't be there long. My kids were getting, Mondays was my only day off at the time. My kids were getting off school, and I had to go home and get them. So I couldn't stay as long as I wanted to, but just doing that meant so much to her. And I knew that because I've been on the other side of that where, you know, you don't want to put someone out, especially if you know they've got a 40-minute drive to come see you. So, of course, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I knew that what she really needed, because people knew when they heard that tone with me that, you know, you need a visit, I'm coming.
Yeah.
And it blessed me so much that I knew that I needed to do that. And so it was sometimes, I guess, being generous is, it also involves
some sacrifice.
being a visitor, you know, giving them your time, like Yvonne does. She goes to visit people, and that kind of thing makes a huge difference when someone's lonely.
Well, and generous can be just small. I know both my son and my son-in-law pulled people out of ditches. They both have trucks and straps that will do that, and so they spent the last couple of days, you know, driving around and helping pull people out of ditches.
Well, you can even sprain your ankle and you get lots of care.
That was a doozy of a sprain.
In the ankle.
Would have probably gone a little differently yesterday, except it was late in the afternoon and it was going to get dark and the weather and I don't know about her complex. She said there was still quite a bit of ice around.
But. Well, I'm not talking that you should put yourself in danger.
You're right.
I don't even at all what I was suggesting. I don't think God would say that you know, she is more valued than you, you know.
Right.
Well, and sometimes, you know, just talking on the phone or texting
can make a difference. So, to sum up this lesson that has taken 3 weeks over a couple of months, what and how should we feel about giving, and how does this impact our daily lives? What should we feel about giving?
We should give with a cheerful heart, or else you don't get to give.
That's right. That's right. If you begrudge it, it's not really giving.
No.
That we should always look for opportunities to give and be generous, even when it means some sacrifice on our part.
Right.
And I don't mean to embarrass anybody in the room, but I happen to know somebody sitting in this room right now who has hit hard times and yet, you know, still finds ways to be generous. Mm-hmm. Like, you get to buy one, get one free at a store, and you keep one and you give one. And yeah, those kinds of things are just good examples of, you don't always have a lot to give, but you give what you can.
Right.
And you don't depend on others to do what you should be doing.
Absolutely.
I mean, like we say, oh, well, the elders, they'll help it.
Right.
It's a hard thing.
It is a hard thing.
It's a hard thing.
It absolutely is.
We have to have it.
And that's what I had hoped to get across in this lesson, more than anything about dollar amounts or tick off the number of good deeds we've done. It's a heart. And that means we're always looking for opportunities to be generous and to help.
Well, I need this lesson. I'm glad we studied it.
You did.
Sometimes we get lax in what things we really already know.
Yeah.
But we need to be good in remembrance of things.
Well, I think that's what Bible study is all about anyway. For those of us who've been in the church forever, maybe we're not hearing something for the first time, but maybe we're finally hearing it.
Very true.
It is.
Other people bring, five people could bring the same lesson, and we would be able to glean something from each one, I think, because of the way they said it.
Well, and if you hear a lesson like this when you're impoverished, so you do get what you can at the time, perhaps, but you don't, you know, you can't do much about it, so you kind of dismiss the things that are being discussed. But when your situation changes and you hear the lesson again, suddenly you're like, oh, I'm not impoverished anymore. Right. This applied to me, you know. And not that it doesn't ever apply to us, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because there are ways to be generous even when.
Well, Roger would tell this story on himself, so I don't think he'd mind my telling it. But when we married, we're having talked about our offering, you know, each week and what we're going to do. And I said, but now we've joined forces and we have, you know, this much money together that we didn't have separately. And he told me later, he said, you know, I've been bad about not reviewing that. You kind of get in a habit, you get in a rut. He said, but you're right, we need to sit down and really think about this and what the situation now is that it wasn't before.
This lesson has been exactly for us to see if we're doing it.
Right, right. Yes. That's all it is we help return a magnifying glass on ourselves. Well, I thank you, ladies. Next week, we're going to do geography. I think we're going to kind of review and get back to where we were. I'm going to take that board home with me and redo it.
Okay.
Yes, it's the third Wednesday. Did you want to teach?
No, I was about to ask what lesson are we in. Well, lesson 5 in this book. You want to see what's
lesson 5?
I've been gone so much.
Wait a minute. Let me see. Let me dig a minute.
Yeah, we've all been gone a lot.
Yeah, I don't think it's... 5 seems...
Well, I had lesson 4, question mark. Then last night I was going over to lesson five trying to figure out these answers to these questions that I've been getting very far.
Okay, now does that mean we should use our review questions of those lessons?
I don't think we've started lesson four.
So we'll be on lesson four.
Okay, right.
So
we've done lesson three. But before we do lesson four,
we're gonna
review. And I did email everybody review questions. I did. It's been a long time ago. It's been at least a couple of months ago. If you don't have it, I'll email it again. But you could print out your review questions for the first three chapters. And I'll go home and send an email. And I'll just reattach it. So don't bother to do that. I'll just redo that.
I don't have
to. Well, I'll print some for you.
Okay.
I'll bring it tonight.